The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network. I want to mention a great resource for writers, and this month's sponsor, Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories. I'll expound later in the show, but the short version is this long-awaited book about the craft of creative writing from New York Times bestselling author Steve Almond sets out to debunk the well-meaning but misguided myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and most honest work. Pick up a copy today of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, wherever you buy books, more soon. Greetings, scribes. I have got some exciting news to share. The Writer Files now has an exclusive Patreon community where subscribers will get exclusive access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and content from productivity and publishing experts each month. In the meantime, just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles. It's free to join Patreon to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something special.
I heard something really wonderful from the writer T. Jefferson Parker, who's a dear friend of mine, many years, and he was speaking at a conference, and he said when your story stalls out on you, you've played your hand too soon, and that is invariably what gets me into trouble, is playing my hand too soon, and then to solve the problem, it involves really going back into the previous scenes to see what it was that I gave away.
Hey, welcome back to The Writer Files. This is your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you more pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. New York Times bestselling and award-winning novelist Elizabeth George spoke to me about her exacting research, the discipline of psychological suspense, and interweaving cultural issues into her latest, Something to Hide. Dubbed an essential writer of popular fiction today, Elizabeth is the recipient of the Anthony Award, the Agatha Award, France's Grand Prix, and has been twice nominated for the Edgar. She's best known as the author of the Linley Mystery series that was adapted into the lauded PBS BBC show, the Inspector Linley Mystery series, currently streaming on Amazon Prime and others. Her latest, Something to Hide, a Linley novel, marks the 21st in that series. The New York Times Review called it another intelligent, intricate mystery starring Detective Inspector Thomas Linley of New Scotland Yard. Elizabeth is also a philanthropist who, through the Elizabeth George Foundation, makes grants to writers and organizations benefiting disadvantaged youth, particularly in the area of the arts. In this file, Elizabeth and I discussed why she approaches the writing craft with the same discipline and perseverance she had as a teacher, how to structure a mystery layer by layer, understanding the editorial process and learning to be a more efficient writer, the foundation of any great novel, her secret hacks, and a lot more. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. Yes, we are back on The Writer Files, and I am thrilled today to be joined by the best-selling and award-winning author, Elizabeth George. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know you're a busy author these days, but how are you surviving there?
Okay. I'm working on another novel right now, and otherwise mostly in Seattle. We're kind of hunkered down, not only because of the Omicron variant, but the weather has not been particularly good recently. So it's nice to have books to read in situations like this.
100%. And I think this the effects of global weirding, as it may be, has turned, I understand my brother lives in Seattle. So, you know, you're seeing some like snows there that are kind of unprecedented, aren't you?
It snowed before in Seattle. But outside of Seattle, in the mountains, they have 122% of their usual snowfall for the entire winter. So yeah, we've been having a big winter here.
Very interesting. From fires to unprecedented snowfall, it certainly is an interesting time to be alive. But yeah. We are here to talk about your latest Something to Hide, a Lindley novel, and I can't wait to dig into your writing process because you've essentially written the book on how to write a novel. But let's start out with just kind of the cliff notes of your origin story, because we talk to authors about kind of their superhero origins now that you've become this household name and a best-selling fictionist. Talk a little bit about kind of the seeds and the origin of that aha moment when you realized like this is something that you were going to make a career doing.
Well, you know, I have always written and I have always really loved writing, but I never really considered that one could do this as a career. I had no idea really how you went about getting published at all. And so initially when I started writing really seriously, which was when I started writing British crime novels, the main thing was for me was that I hoped that I would somehow be able to make enough money at it that I could quit my teaching job. Not because I didn't like teaching. I liked teaching very much, but because I really believed and had more and more come to realize that I was supposed to be writing, really meant to write. So with my first contract, I did immediately have enough funds from that first contract to at least go another year. And then I wrote another book during that time. And then when I wrote my third book, and it was already under contract, the third book and the fourth book. And at that point I realized, okay, you know, I can do this professionally. And so that was sort of how it went. It took a couple of years, but I saw that it was going to be possible.
Yeah. Yeah. And since then you've hit number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. You know, you've had just this incredible run of success, sold millions of books, won quite a few awards and been honored, as well as had a hit TV show kind of spring out of this Lindley series that's also garnered rave reviews. How does it feel now that you're kind of on the other side of it? And, you know, we can talk about the philanthropy piece kind of down the road, but yeah, what does it feel like now with Something to Hide, your baby just kind of landing as the 21st in this psychological suspense series?
Well, you know, the reality is that because I work so much, it really hasn't changed my life in as far as the time that I have. It certainly has in my has changed my life in my ability to, you know, do more traveling than I would have been able to do, and certainly has changed my life in that I have met really, really wonderful people, both fellow writers and just people who are readers. So that part is different. But I approach writing a novel just exactly the same way that I approached my career as a teacher, which is, I just did it. I don't know if that makes any sense. I love doing it, but it's never a chore. But the main thing about it is, you know, I've really learned how persistent and self-disciplined, you know, one human being could be. That is like me. So that has really changed. I have, you know, the one thing is, I have very little free time as a result, because not only am I writing, but I am, studying Italian and, you know, and running a foundation. And so I pretty much don't have any free time except, well, maybe on the weekends, I have a few hours that I, you know, that are just like R&R.
And that organization is the Elizabeth George Foundation. which has a pretty inspiring mission to really to help benefit disadvantaged youth, right? Particularly in the areas of the arts. But what I found fascinating was that you do mention young people aging out of the foster care system, which I think is really kind of probably an underserved group there, right?
Right. I think it's an underserved group probably across the whole country. Yeah, I wanted to be able to provide scholarships for young people who aged out of the foster care system in the country, and who also wanted to go to college as a result. So that's been a great pleasure. We support one organization in particular, the Orangewood Foundation in Southern California, which is where I used to live.
Yeah. Well, we're here to talk about Something to Hide. And of course, this is the 21st in the Thomas Lindley mystery series. And it's been getting some pretty great reviews. And I want to talk about kind of the process that went into this one, because I understand, you know, you undertake a pretty unique research process, as most psychological thriller writers do. Do you want to talk a little bit about the difference between Something to Hide and some of your previous in the series?
Well, the manner in which I do the research is pretty much the same every time I do a book. And that always begins with a lot of reading. And in that reading, I am looking for locations where I might want to set a novel. And I also am reading up on whatever subject matter that I am going to be investigating in the book as well. Because the thing about Something to Hide, and really all of my books, is that they're operating on more than one level. One level is the crime in the investigation and the arrest of the guilty party, and the other level is a level of social issues or cultural issues or some traditional activities as well, So the location research is the easiest to do, obviously, because the locations are there once I have isolated them and know that I need to go see them. They are all there. But the social issues are what need to be explored. And sometimes I do that through interviews. Sometimes I do that through reading, do a lot of work on the internet to see what has been written about it in newspapers or magazines or scholarly papers. And I would think, I think that for this particular book with this, the subject matter is the first time that I have taken on a particular subject that is culturally sensitive to a group of people, at the same time as it is being pursued for legal reasons by other groups of people. Mm-hmm. So I haven't done that before, and I think that is largely what makes Something to Hide a little bit different from my other books.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to take a quick break for my podcast recommendation for this week. Have you run out of interesting things to say to friends when you actually get to see them? Then take a listen to the Book Dreams podcast. Each week, co-hosts Julie Sternberg and Eve Yohalem use books to explore fascinating questions like, what happened when a Harvard professor staked her reputation on an alleged Gospel of Jesus's wife that turned out to be fake? How did debut author Tom Lin save the American Western by blowing it to bits? Are pigeons rats with wings or wonder birds? And what's the who, when, where, how, and especially why of books bound in human skin? Recent and upcoming Book Dreams highlights include conversations with Disha Filya, award-winning author of The Secret Lives of Church Ladies, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Catherine Schultz, and neuroscientist and dreams researcher Siddhartha Ribeiro. You can subscribe and listen to Book Dreams wherever you get your podcasts. Earlier in the show, I mentioned an invaluable resource for writers. Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories based on three decades of writing, failing, and trying again,
Author Steve Almond is a beloved professor at Harvard and Wesleyan and the acclaimed New York Times bestseller of 12 books of fiction and nonfiction. And in Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, Steve employs the radical empathy he displayed as a co-host of the Dear Sugars podcast with Cheryl Strayed, where they explored the joys and trials of storytelling to explode myths that hold us back from writing our deepest and truest work. The book includes chapters on plot, character, and chronology, but travels far beyond the earnest intentions of most craft books. It also includes writing prompts to generate new work. Pulitzer Prize-winning author Richard Russo called it one of the best books on writing he's ever read, and also the funniest. Pick up a copy of Truth is the Arrow, Mercy is the Bow, a DIY manual for the construction of stories wherever you buy books, and add it to your TBR today. And just a quick aside to revisit the exclusive Writer Files Patreon community, where subscribers get access to uncut ad-free interviews, a writer's happy hour, bonus breakdowns, and a lot more. I know that for serious writers, it can be more distracting than ever to cut through the noise, stay productive, and home in on what's happening in the publishing industry. Over 8 years, we've provided a looking glass into the habits of professional writers and publishing industry insiders. And as your humble host, I've decided to launch a membership-based Patreon for serious scribes to cut through the noise, swap tips and tricks, and hang out with like-minded peers. Just head over to patreon.com/thewriterfiles for bonus writing resources, monthly episode breakdowns, writer's happy hour, a community of your peers, ad-free episodes, and more. It's free to join to get a preview, and you can upgrade anytime. That's patreon.com/thewriterfiles. Help us start something cool and special. Keep calm and write on. I thought what the Wall Street Journal said about you was cool. They said it deserves repeating: from suspense to social commentary, from violence to pathos, from villainy to possible redemption, Ms. George can do it all with style. It was pretty cool.
That's nice.
Congratulations on the latest. And yeah, let's talk some about your process. And, you know, I mean, I know you've talked about this at length, but, you know, with a long-running and beloved series like the Lindley series, how do you, you know, continue to challenge yourself? And then also, how are you finding ways to stay so prolific?
The process that I use is one that I developed over time, and I think that most people who are engaged in an artistic endeavor end up doing this, whether it is sort of like in writing, whether it's by, you know, writing by the seat of your pants, which my students and I call pantsing it, or whether it the writing emerges from a process that you have developed that works for you. And so very early in my writing career, I realized, based on my first two editorial letters, what I needed to do to improve my books so that I would not be in a position of having to do massive editorial work on a successive draft of the book. And in order to do that, I just sort of analyzed what the editor was telling me. And my first editorial letter was 9 pages long, with 22 paragraphs, and the paragraphs had nothing but questions in them. And somehow I had to figure out a way to address these questions within the novel, you know, answer those questions. So when I did that, it lengthened the novel by about 100 pages, as I recall. And it also, you know, was a long process. And I realized that I didn't want to have to do that again. And so I began with, you know, deciding that most of the questions that my editor asked was about character. So why not begin creating characters in advance of the story so that I know pretty much every single thing about this character, and that will then be reflected in the character's behavior and in the character's dialogue in the novel. So having done that, the next editorial letter I got was 2 pages and 9 paragraphs. Mm. And I could see from that editorial letter that it had mostly to do with setting. And so I thought, okay, so that's really what I need to work on next. I've never had a problem with plot. My editor's always been, you know, fine with the plot. It's these additional items that needed to be worked on. So then for the third novel, I actually created the setting in advance, a British boarding school, and then did everything else that I had been doing prior to that for the second novel. In other words, I also included doing character analyses. But to do the British boarding school, I actually created my own British boarding school, complete with prospectus to send out to the parents. So I pretty much knew everything there was to know about this particular boarding school. And in order to do that, I went to England and visited British boarding schools, six of them. And that sort of allowed me to see, you know, kind of what the system is like. So essentially, I am following that same process throughout my work. There was no change in the process when I did Something to Hide. It takes place in London, and I began by doing the same kind of location research that I do when I'm out in the countryside. And conducting interviews, also taking many, many photographs, writing up my notes at night, typing them into my computer. Same thing that I've done from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever run up against any kind of, because it sounds like you've gotten to into a process now where you can get into flow state pretty easily. Have you ever run up against any type of block or any type of, lulls in your creative output?
Yeah, sure. I think everybody does. Everybody, I think, has some part of the process of writing that is challenging for them. And for me, the challenging part has always been what I call the step outline. And when I write a book, I don't just sort of sit down at the computer, having created characters, and try to get in touch with the cosmos. When I write a book, I start out, after I've done the characters, you know, created them, then I start out with a decision of who will be the point of view characters in this particular book. And then having made that decision, my next decision is, okay, so, where is this book going to begin? At the beginning, before the beginning, or after the beginning? And then I begin to jot down potential scenes, noting that in a crime novel, and indeed probably most novels, that causality is really important to carry me forward. In other words, there's something that happens in the first scene that will cause another scene to happen. It might not be the next scene, but it will cause another scene to happen. But that is the toughest part, is when I'm looking at my characters as point of view characters, and then I'm saying to myself, okay, let's see if we can come up with the first 10 scenes in this novel. You know, like what logically will follow this? What logically will follow that? I write those these on little slips of paper that I put on the floor and underneath the names of my point of view characters. So I decide, okay, from whose point of view is this now going to be seen? And then what I do is I have basically columns of these little pieces of paper, be it 10. I try to do 10. I always do 10. I try to do 15 or 20, but sometimes I can't in the step outline. And that's the toughest part, because that's when I'm thinking about the logical sequence events in a plot. And for all of the things that I do in my process, that part is the most difficult.
Yeah. So are you finding ways? Because, you know, I know a lot of others talk about kind of productive procrastination at that phase where you're kind of trying to synthesize everything into, you know, where you get to a place where you're like, oh, okay, this is how I'm going to proceed. Do you have, are you utilizing any tricks in that respect? Do you have some hobbies that you kind of lean on to kickstart your brain, take a walk or play the piano or something similar?
No, I really don't. I mean, I have certain things that I have to do anyway, but I wouldn't say that they are any part of my creative process. I that's not to say that I don't have moments where there's, you know, there's a big problem. But I heard something really wonderful from the writer T. Jefferson Parker, who's a dear friend of mine, many years, and he was speaking at a conference, and he said when your story stalls out on you, you've played your hand too soon. And that is invariably what gets me into trouble, is playing my hand too soon. And then to solve the problem, it involves really going back into the previous scenes to see what it was that I gave away too soon and remove that from the scene. I do other things, but they're just not related. You know, for example, I have been studying Italian for about 10 years now, and I now take private lessons with an Italian woman who was born and grew up in Pisa, Italy. So she's my Italian instructor. So I do that. And then also I have become completely addicted to the Great British Baking Show. And that has spurred me to start baking, which was something that my mom did. You know, she was a great cook and a great baker. And I probably, because of that, I didn't ever bake anything. And so I started this past year baking, and I just completely enjoy it so much. I've sort of turned into a baking addict. And then I give away all the stuff that I bake. So that otherwise, you know, I'd end up weighing 500 pounds. So, and my husband has weaned himself off sweets, so he doesn't eat it. But my neighbors are quite happy.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, of course, we will link to the latest and your home base. There was this ElizabethGeorgeOnline.com and the foundation as well. You are on all the socials, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Before we wrap up with a fun question and any advice you have for your fellow scribes, is there anywhere else you want to connect with listeners out there? Because I know you've got some other things happening.
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that I was going to teach a course in a writing seminar in Tuscany in June, and that unfortunately has been canceled because of COVID. But you know, I just really encourage people to to take a look at Something to Hide, and if they've never read a book in this series of books, it's not necessary to have done so in order to understand this book. So I would definitely encourage people to do that. And I would super encourage people to register to vote. If you haven't registered, please, please register to vote and then actually do vote. I think there's a lot on the line right now.
100%. Voting rights are huge. And of course, this is a pretty timely issue. And you know, it hasn't really changed over the years, but it has a little bit more recently. But yeah, thank you for that great reminder. I will just read this New York Times book review called talks about Something to Hide and said Elizabeth George delivers another intelligent, intricate mystery starring Detective Inspector Thomas Linley of New Scotland Yard, and of course, Publishers Weekly called it superlative. Congrats on the latest. And a quick fun one. If you could have dinner with your favorite at your favorite restaurant in the world with any author from any era, who would you take and where would you take them?
Oh, okay. Well, and it could be anywhere.
Where any, would you take them? Anywhere in the world and any author from any era.
Oh gosh, that's pretty tough. You know, but what came to my mind immediately is John Le Carre. You know, he had the most amazing career that has demonstrated not only the power of writing, but the fact that you can grow as a writer. When you read his earliest books to his most recent book before he died, when you read those, you can just see his first books were very simple, a small town in Germany, a murder of quality, and even The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, all very pretty simple books. And he just went from strength to strength to strength to strength. And I admire that so much. I almost did get to meet him. My editor once said, because we had the same publishing house, and my editor, I said, oh, I would love to meet John Le Carre. And, and she said, that will happen. But of course, it was not able to be. Now, as to the restaurant, that's tough, you know, because I don't really know any international restaurants. Oh, except that in London, there is this wonderful Indian restaurant that I usually go to with an Anglo-Pakistani friend of mine. But I can't remember the name of it. I'm so sorry. Oh, Khan's, K-H-A-N-S, Khan's.
Oh, okay.
And it is off of not Bayswater, but it's in the Bayswater area, and we always walk over to it, and it's just fabulous. Well, but again, I would say that, you know, the important thing is that you have to go with somebody who knows Indian food, and so she's really good at that, and I just tell her to order.
Very nice.
Me, John Le Carre, and I would have to invite my friend Kay to do the ordering.
Lovely, lovely. My mouth just watered. Perfect. Well, of course, I will actually link to the Mastering the Process from Idea to Novel as well. You've got some great advice in there. Maybe kind of in a nutshell, just your advice to your fellow scribes on how to persevere maybe through good times and bad.
Well, you know, I could only quote what P.D. James said to me when I was rejected for my second novel, and I happened to go that night to a book signing and asked her how long it was, how many books did she have to write to get published, and she of course got published, never got rejected in her entire career, but she recognized why I was asking the question, and she said, my dear, you have done something that most people only dream of doing. You have written a novel. You must never give up. And that's what I would say to all writers. That's the important part, is don't give up and continue to write, and do not write the same book over and over thinking that if you do it long enough, it will improve. It might, but the better thing to do is to grow as a writer by creating the next novel.
I love it. Never give up. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for your time, your wisdom. We wish you the best of luck. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And come back and visit us again.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.